Labdien! Šis ir raidījums Nākotnes kapitāls. Raidījums, kurā mēs ne tikai runājam par to, kā investēt, bet paši arī to darām. Mani sauc Raivis Vūns, un šodien studijā man ir ļoti īpašs viesis no mūsu kaimiņu valsts, Igaunijas, Jāks Rosare. Hello, Jāk!
Hello!
Saruna notiks angļu valodā, bet no sākuma es pastāstīšu īsi, kā ir gājis manam Konstantīna un Seb Robo investora portfelim. Šonedēļ manā portfelī turpinājās izaugsme 27,23%, vēl aizvien pateicoties kriptovalūtām. Baltijas akcijas lēnām slīd uz leju, peer-to-peer nekur nekāpja. Seb Robo investoram arī neliela izaugsme pateicoties kopējo globālo tirgu vērtības pieaugumam 16,01%, un arī Konstantīns ir atgriezies pie augšupējošas trajektorijas, viņam pateicoties tam, ka arī ASV akciju tirgos kopējais noskaņojums ir diezgan pozitīvs, ir 6,7% plusā. Un tagad mēs pārslēgsimies uz angļu valodu un sarunāsimies ar Jāku par to, kā igauņi kļuva par labākajiem investoriem reģionā, par to, kā mums, latviešiem, pietuvoties igauņiem, un arī parunāsim par kādu jaunumu, kādēļ Jāks ir atceļojis uz Latviju. Ok, so now we can switch to English.
Sveiki!
So maybe we can speak in the Latvian.
Yeah, that's pretty much all.
Ok, so Jāk, you are a pretty famous investor in Estonia. A lot of Estonians know you. A lot of Latvians who are interested in investments know you, and probably Lithuanians as well. I recently spoke with a lady from Lithuanian Nasdaq, and she was very well acquainted with you.
So, good to know.
Yeah, exactly. So you are one of the most internationally famous people who has come here. So thank you for being here today. And the reason you are here for today is the book. Your book that was originally written in Estonia is now translated in Latvian, and people will be able to learn from our next door neighbors. And like before the recording, I said to you, it is super great that now books are starting to appear that are from our own region, because while the fundamentals of investment probably are the same with Americans or British or whatever, but we still have specifics to our region. So please tell us about your book and what can we learn from it.
Yeah, so I'm very glad that I was invited here, and Latvian stock market actually was one of my first big wins with Olain Farm and Saf Tehnika when I was just in college. So sweet memories of Latvian stock exchange. The book actually was first published in 2010, first edition, and this current book is fourth edition. So it's been one of the most popular personal finance books in Estonia. I think it's number two after Rich Dad Poor Dad, which is like an international bestseller.
That is a pretty cool book to be together with.
Yeah, for sure. And I was one of the first bloggers about personal finance. I did every month update in my blog about my investments and life in general. And so it kind of caught on, and I think in 2020, it became very popular in Estonia. So we had tens of different blogs started, and now we have, I think, 10 to 20 finfluencers who are basically doing TikToks or Instagram, and also many books have been written. So it's getting more popular, and that was one of my personal mission, is to maybe bring more people into investing. Because when I started, there was maybe just a couple of thousand people who owned Estonian or Latvian or Lithuanian stocks. But actually everybody should be, you know, part owners of the local companies. So that was kind of the mission. And the idea behind the book partly came also because I was selling books in America with Southwestern when I was in college.
Oh, that is a very hard job.
Yeah, it was pretty hard. So I did it for 7 summers total. So quite a long time. And what I saw there was that even America, there are so many people who are poor. And for me, it was a big mystery because they haven't had confiscations and money reforms and inflation. Like if your grandfather invested $1,000 in S&P 500, you know, your whole family should be rich. But in real life, people were sometimes even poorer than they are in Latvia or in Estonia, like just working, you know, rat race. So, and then I kind of started to learn more about it. Why is it so that some people work really hard and never get a lot, like ahead money wise, and some people almost don't do any work, but money works for them. And this is kind of the basics of the book. And I think the best feedback I've got is that the people really have enjoyed that it's written in very easy to read form. And it kind of takes my own story from childhood when I first learned about money. And basically, when I was in high school, I did my first stock investment in Estonian Telecom, and kind of how I moved to real estate and other businesses as well. Mm.
Yeah, so maybe spoiled that a little bit. How did you get to that? Was your family experts in finances or investment? Because a high school kid investing is not a very common story, especially around 15 years ago.
Yeah, I graduated in 2000. So basically, I'm very thankful for my dad. He's a geography professor in Tartu University, and he didn't really know much about money or investing, but he taught me accounting when I was I think 10 years old. So in order to get my money, like a weekly allowance, I had to present my dad every Friday, this notebook with my expenses written. And I really enjoyed it. And somehow I kind of liked always Monopoly and this kind of games. So I think it's a little bit you're born with some kind of passions, but also the times were this, that when I was 10 and 12, then there was this money reform, and everybody, I think it was same in Latvia, basically everybody started from same kind of zero. We got 10 euros or something in Estonian currency, and I remember that summer after the money reform, we kind of ran out of the money in the middle of the summer with family, so we basically ate potatoes only, and we were, you know, as a child, it kind of impacts you, because at the same time, the currency stores, you could buy everything if you had US dollars or Finnish marks. So I didn't understand why other people can buy stuff and we cannot. So I think this was one big drive also from childhood. And then when I was in high school, I ended up reading one book from Seppo Saario, who's a very famous Finnish stock market investor. He's, I think, best-selling author in Finland about investing in stock market. And I accidentally found this book from a local library, and it really changed my life, because I was in 11th grade. And from that book, I learned that everybody can buy shares and become owner of companies. I never thought that it's like a random guy can buy shares of Google or Amazon. So after that, I made a goal for myself to become an investor as well. And basically next year I bought my first shares, and now it's 25 years later. I've been investing for a quarter of a century now. And I actually got to meet Seppo in Finland as well. He's in 90s now and big hero of mine.
Oh, did you say that?
I got his signature in the book, and he's been investing from 50s, I think 1950s. And he wrote recently a book, for kids as well, how to start investing in stock market, and he's very active in sports as well. So I think he's one of my heroes, and Warren Buffett is another one. So I met him in Omaha. We went with my son to Berkshire Hathaway meeting 2 years ago. So those two heroes are.
That's very interesting, and it is so interesting to hear about the story that you have been investing for 25 years. So that means you started to invest in this, it's not the right word, but pre-digital era, because how to do that was completely different than it is now. Because now I take out my phone, I open an app, I click twice, and I have a stock.
It's done, right?
Or maybe a part.
When I did this first IPO, then I remember I went to the bank, SEB Bank, with my dad. So we opened, I think I was still underage, so my dad helped you open the bank account. And then you basically filled a paper form for the stock. And then later there was an internet bank, but since I was in high school, I could only do the trades when it was between the classes. Mm-hmm. And we only had I think 10 computers. So everybody was rushing. And I told my friends, hey guys, it's very important. I need to use computer. I have to sell my stock.
So friends were going to play Counter-Strike and StarCraft, and you went to Stock Exchange.
It was more like Red Alert and something like that at the time.
And you said, no, I have to trade. That's very interesting. So, and so how did you decide to spread the knowledge? Because, okay, that's one thing. You are personally interested. You do that. There are a lot of people in Latvia. I'm sure there are hundreds, if not thousands, people who have a similar story to you. Maybe since 2000s, they just quietly trade. Maybe they work in financial sector, or maybe not. It's just their hobby. But they do not write about that. They do not tell stories about that, because that's also a very specific thing to decide to help others. How did you get to that?
I was invited back to my high school to talk about investing. It was like this back to school program that alumni go to school. And I went to the math class and I talked, and it was kind of, and the teacher actually asked, like, you know, is there any books the kids should read? And I was like, okay, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad is something, but it's very real estate focused and very US focused. Mm-hmm. So I think at that spot, I was thinking that maybe, you know, there should be something. And there was one Estonian journalist, Villu Sirnask, and he had written a book. There was two very, very small books in the 90s, end of 90s, before the big stock market crash in 1996, I think. It was called How to Get Rich was one, and How to Get Rich with the Stock Market was another one. So those were also my reading list books I enjoyed when I was in middle school. But they never got updated and they kind of faded away. So there was almost like an empty spot in the market for this kind of book as well. I think the biggest push actually came from the Southwestern students, because we had a lot of students who made, like, they were 19 years old, they went to America, they sold books, and they came back home with like $5,000 or $10,000, and they had never seen this kind of money. Mm-hmm. Like, my first summer, I made more money than my mom and dad combined in a year. So, and a lot of them just blew the money, you know, they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I felt it was kind of my mission also to teach them, you know, that hey, don't spend all. And what I started to teach was this 50% club that I've written here as well. So the idea is that at least always save half of your income, and the other half then you can, you know, enjoy. But the first half you should save and invest, and then this money is almost like your soldier or your worker, so it will start earning dividends and interest for you. And then it kind of took off. I think biggest thing was this book got to national TV. So there was like this evening show in TV3, and then I had like a very crappy website that you could order the book, and it crashed because there was like hundreds of people ordering the book. And so that's kind of how it got popular. But I actually enjoyed talking about finances and teaching others basically from high school.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that you are still doing that. You are not just writing, you are talking. And by the way, this is not your only book, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I kind of copied Robert Kiyosaki a little bit, that this is kind of the first and main book. But then in Estonian, we also have a basically handbook of getting wealthy with stocks, handbook of getting wealthy with real estate. And there was a book for school age kids, kind of like more towards entrepreneurship, that basically like a novel of four kids starting their own businesses in the summer vacation and learning how to be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since your work, and you have been instrumental into growing this Estonian investment culture, I want to talk a little bit about that as well, because of course here in Latvia we look with envy at you guys, because you have so many active investors, and there are the way government talks about investing in Estonia seems to be like different, with a better understanding. Right now, our government is waking up that we need this investment culture, that we need our big national companies to go into the market so they can grow, so people can invest, so people can get more money, so they have so our pension funds can invest locally and so on. So how did this come about in Estonia? Was it just because you read a Finnish guy's book, or was it because Skype was such a super success story? How did it happen?
I think there are several reasons. As always, there's no one reason. We had the first stock market boom in 1997, and then there was a big crash in 1998 with the Russian crash. So I think the first generation of stock market investors lost, and it was very popular to do like this margin loans. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people lost a lot of money, and then it kind of faded away. And I started investing in 99, so that was I would say like a start of next generation of investors, because we had the IPO of Estonian Telecom, which was probably the biggest one then. There was, I think, close to 10,000 investors in that. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of slowly grew. Aribab, the newspaper, kind of helped Business Daily in Estonia. So they started this Investor Thomas project that they started investing actual money and writing about it. And I think also Delfi and Postimees, other media outlets, they started this financial papers as well. And then in 2005 and 2006, there was kind of another boom. 2009, we had another crash. And then 2021 was probably the biggest boom year. So it was mainly good, I would say, that we have so many investors. But in 2021, basically government opened up the pensions, so people could take their pension money out and start gambling in stocks. And that was a pretty wild year. So we had a lot of startup companies listed in stock exchange, and most of them are either bankrupt or near bankrupt by now. But I think in general, it's a big plus that people started investing. And I think it also came because of these investment clubs. In smaller towns, people kind of got together and invited me or somebody from newspapers to talk about investing. Another big push, I think, that helped was that when we published this book, we had 10,000 copies of the books sponsored by banks and local companies that we basically gave away in high schools. Mm. So it's now like 12 years ago. Every high school graduate got the free copy of the book. So like all country basically got this knowledge when they graduated high school, and it's now 12 years past. So those people are in their 30s. So hopefully they are now investing. So I think that kind of helped. And this is something we try to do in Latvia as well. So we had sponsors and we printed 1,000 books here that we will be just giving away in high schools, trying to get this knowledge when kids are in high school.
Yeah, hopefully that will stick, and hopefully more people will get into investing. But you mentioned that opening up pension funds. People with whom I have talked about this, Estonians, Latvians, Lithuanians, have been very critical and skeptical about this. Was there any positive effects? How do you see that? Because a lot of people say that it was a very populistic move that did not actually help that much, because a lot of people just used it either to pay off their debts or buy plasma TVs or LCDs or OLED TVs, whatever, or go to trips that they did not actually invest. How do you look at that?
I think I would say 80% or maybe even 90%, that's true, that a lot of money just got put into the spending. And we had a big inflation peak in Estonia, like there was 20% inflation year after that. But I think you needed some rules to make it more liberal, the access to pension, because we also had this that, like when my parents retired, they couldn't really take the money out from the pension. They could only invest it into life insurance products, and those were really bad rate of return products. So I think there were some good sides also that, you know, you can, let's say you get sick and you're like in your 50s, you should be able to take the money out and pay for your medical bills, right? Mm-hmm. So it went more liberal, but now the stats are in also for like first 3 years, like people had this chance that they take the money and start investing on their own. And I think the stats are pretty miserable that what I saw a couple of weeks ago was that it's like the average rate of return is below zero. Mm-hmm. So even though we've had a really big boom in stock market, most people somehow gamed, like they tried to time the market. And of course, there were some winners probably who put everything on Bitcoin and then it's been going up. But I think as a general rule, I feel at least that this pension second and third pillar should be like these are your longest investments, so put these in index funds and don't touch them. And then with your extra savings, like when you're in this 50% club, with that you can more gamble and make, you know, strategic investments.
Yeah, but more liberal access if you need the money for something serious, but in general it should remain in those pension funds, because pension funds invest in index funds and ETFs. Yeah. Like, I don't know how it was in Estonia, but the last year, 2023, for our pension funds was really good. Like, I think every offer, every pension fund had double-digit gains in the last year. So
I'm one of the founders of Estonian version of Indexo as well, Tuleva. So they were the first to introduce the low-cost index funds. Before that, it was kind of common to charge 2% annual fee and then put the money in like a closet index fund. So now the fees have gone down a lot. And I think before also we had this that whenever you changed pension funds, you could charge 1% fee. So we had salespeople basically just moving people from one fund to another and taking fees every time. So this is all changed now. And I think now, the rate of returns are pretty much market average. So we've had really great stock market for, you know, last year. So the rate of returns are better now.
Mm, yeah. And about the Baltic markets, like the last year and the beginning, 2022, 2023, and basically the beginning of this year is not in general that great for our Baltic stocks on average. There are some companies that have shown really good numbers and growth, but in general, not that great, especially when you look at S&P 500 and in general American stocks, Magnificent Seven, the tech companies like Nvidia this year only has like 70% gain, I think, or something like that. And people have been asking, do we really need to invest in Baltic stocks, or should we just buy like big index funds or any other like American stock funds? Is there hope for our local stock market?
It's a very good question and very common one as well. Also, a lot of my friends and investors have told me basically after last year that, hey, why should I work hard and try to analyze local companies? I can just put money in S&P 500. Historically, it's like 11% per year. Mm-hmm. Recently, it's been 20%+ per year. But I think it's almost like if you take it to the extreme, then this creates good buying opportunities, because it was pretty much the same after the crash in 98 and in 2008, that local markets kind of went down a lot. And I remember in 2010, I was buying Saftehnika at Online Farm, and they were both selling for less than they had cash in the bank account. And the Merco construction company was kind of the same after the crisis. So for a value investor, I think this less interest in the market actually gives you better opportunities down the road. But also on like other way or what is against it is this, that this Big Seven, they are actually taking like a local profits away as well. I think like when I think about Estonian media, probably Facebook and Google make the most money in, and probably same in Latvia. Yeah, so since I've been active in Instagram, I just saw how powerful channel this is. So I've been holding Meta, and it's been one of my best positions profit-wise. So I think it kind of makes sense also that you need to look outside of Baltics, and that's why I think global index funds are good for pensions. Especially now we have more and more talk about this country-specific risk and potential war risk and all this. So I think it's good for people to keep at least some of the assets in global markets. But also I think somebody needs to own the local shares as well. Like you cannot, this is something people don't often understand, that you cannot put the shares like on a drawer somewhere, like always somebody has to own them. So, and I would prefer that local investors own local companies. And I think Swedbank is a great example that a lot of, at least Estonian people don't even know that they can buy Swedbank shares as well, you know, even though it's listed in Stockholm Stock Exchange, not in Tallinn or Riga. But this bank has been printing money, you know, last couple of years. So One strategy I advise people is to look where they spend money, like, and then try to own the same companies where they give money every month. So, you know, your bank and your electric utility, like either Ignitis or Estonian Energy and so on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that is a good way to start. So I would probably do this way that I would have global index funds for my pension, but then with extra savings, I would try to find local companies as well.
Mm-hmm. We always like to ask our guests, our experts, how do they structure their portfolio? Like, I mean, in the percentage wise, like how much do you buy like Baltic stocks? How much any exotic things like cryptos or something even more crazy? I don't know, NFTs. Well, probably no one buys NFTs now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And how much do you buy bonds and index funds and stuff like that? How do you structure it?
I'm personally pretty opportunistic in that sense that where I find the most opportunities where I could beat the market or get better edge from the market is mostly loan deals and real estate deals, because you know, there you can use inside information, and it's, you should use in real estate, mm-hmm. like your local knowledge. With the stock market, I think it's been around 20-30% of my portfolio, and the US stocks have just grown much faster recently, so I think it was pretty much half and half with Baltics, and now I think 2/3 are in American stock exchanges and Western world, and then 1/3 in Baltics. My biggest position is Berkshire Hathaway, so I've been like a big fan of Warren Buffett for years, and this position has more than doubled. And then I also have invested recently in defense industry, so I have like Rheinmetall and Thales and some other. I think those are, for sad reason, but pretty obvious bets. So. And then I also invested in real estate in Germany and Sweden, which has been going down a lot. Like, since I have real estate companies back home in Estonia, when I start a new project, I have to pay €1 for €1 book value. But if I buy German real estate companies, I get 20% 0.2 book value. So it's pretty amazing deals. And then with loans, I've been investing in bank unsecured bonds, so in LHV, Coop, Big Bank, and also in Delfin Group in Latvia, and then in real estate we have like a rental company with a couple of friends, so we have a smaller studio units. And with crypto, I tried it a couple of years ago. I think I sold it when Bitcoin was around 50 or 45,000, so I came out with a little plus. I invested into my summer home this money, so I was like, okay, I can't handle this going up and down. But my kids, I invested crypto for my kids, so they don't even know about it. So for them, it's easy to hold. But I think with this, one kind of rule I have is, if you don't fully understand it, then be careful. And with crypto, I put it in some kind of exchanges that went bankrupt. So I thought I own crypto, but actually the exchange owned it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there are some tricks that you need to know.
Yeah. Crypto in general is a very specific thing, because if you want to buy the actual crypto and put it in your own wallet, then it is a very technically challenging process.
Yeah.
I think that's why we have seen the American Bitcoin ETFs doing rather well, because a lot of people have been interested in crypto, but the technical barriers have been there. But buying an ETF, if you already know how to buy an ETF, is easy.
It's so obvious strategy that I'm afraid it's like almost too easy or too good to be true, that these ETFs are just eating away all the available Bitcoin. But in Estonia, and I think in Latvia as well, you could buy German or Swedish stock exchange, there were trackers of Bitcoin and Ethereum before as well. But we have this famous story in Estonia that Rain Lõhmus, the founder of LHV Bank, is I think the second biggest owner of Ethereum. It's worth over 2 billion euros, but he forgot his password, so he cannot access it. I would feel kind of the same way with buying the cold storage Bitcoin with my own that somehow I will probably lose the passkeys and lose it.
Yeah, that is a big challenge actually for the digital coins. I hope when the European Commission comes out with digital euro, it is easier to use and not so easy to lose. But so the final thing I wanted to ask is, what is your opinion on possible Air Baltic IPO this year? I'm sure you are at least partially following, because if it actually happens, it is quite a big deal for the Baltic region. So what are your thoughts?
I like Warren Buffett has said that the best way to become a millionaire, if you're a billionaire, is to buy an airline company. So, and I think he lost with airlines twice. So he said he will never touch them. And then before COVID, he again bought the airline companies
okay,
and
I see where you are
lost
going.
Everything. In Estonia, we have this big scandal with Estonian Air that I think it went bankrupt twice or three times, and government keeps pushing money. So I don't know if it's like a good investment for investors, but definitely I think it makes sense business-wise to have like strong Baltic airlines, because right now, like, you cannot really grow your country or business if you don't have good air connections, right? And I feel that Estonia really isn't big country enough to have their own airlines. So, and Air Baltic is the strongest in the region, so that would definitely make sense. As with every IPO, like, it's very hard to say should I buy or not if I don't know the details.
Of course, yeah.
But I think as a company, just the business it's a hard business.
Yeah.
It's a much better business to be in Meta type of thing, where you have monopoly almost. But I think it's a necessary company, and I might look into it once it becomes more details available.
Yeah. Well, they have this first hurdle. They have to pay off their own bonds, because the last year in autumn they tried to refinance them and that didn't go through. So now they are looking for ways to pay that off and then IPO. But yeah, hopefully, because that is like other people who have joined us here in the studio have talked about that, especially we here in Latvia. Well, as you know, we have like five companies in main list, basically in what you can invest in, couple of in the First North. So we have, we are basically, when compared to you guys, Estonians or Lithuanians, we are almost invisible in the volume. So right now we have a lot of talks about sending these big government companies. Well, not necessarily big, not Air Baltic is the biggest, but even smaller companies to just grow the volume and grow the interest. Do you see that as a good strategy? Because Estonians and also Lithuanians have sent a couple of their own state-owned companies into the market, and like Enefit Green is, I think, is a success story.
Yeah, I think all in all it's a good thing, because like if the company is owned by investors, it usually creates much better corporate governance as well. Like before that, we had some corruption scandals, and you know, if it's owned by government, then it actually is owned by nobody, right? Because nobody takes really accountability. So I think it's in good sense. And also what we've been looking in Estonia is listing of bonds. Like right now Estonia has financed its debt just by issuing bonds to like big institutional investors. And I think personally it would be wise to do like a small nomination, maybe 1,000 euro bond or 100 euro bond to finance the defense expenses. I think Latvian and Lithuanian bonds are trading in the market, so regular people can invest there. In 2021 we had a lot of this IPO boom, and we had this funder beam where really small, tiny startups could raise a lot of money. So I think you cannot take it too far also, because looking back, like, people lost quite a bit of money with those startups, and you really shouldn't list like a company with, you know, 1,000 euro turnover a month in a stock exchange. And we had this small bicycle company that I was invested before IPO, that basically they had close to 12,000 investors joining in IPO, and the company was basically three guys and a dog and one bike. So you can always take the boom too far as well. But there are some companies in Estonia also that we are looking to, you know, waiting to be listed. Like in energy business, we have Alexela, which is like the, similar to Virši, I think, is what's listed here. So they have gas stations, but they're also now investing into the electricity generation. And I think defense industry is something that I've been looking personally at some startup investing, and I think that might be like a next big thing, that drones and software and, you know, this kind of, this suits more Baltic states, like not big heavy tank industries, but more like this future of defense industry. So that's something I'm hoping.
Okay. Well, I think that is it. Maybe just one final short question and short answer. If a person here is listening, he is watching, he maybe will buy your book, read your book or any other book, and he thinks, okay, I should follow in the footsteps of Jaak, I should invest, maybe he is in high school or just finished high school. The first step, what he needs to do? He or she.
Yeah, I think the first step is just mental, that you don't think about saving money as saving for future purchases, but you think saving money as creating a tool or capital. So when the farmers, they save their potatoes for the spring, that they know that these potatoes are worth of gold because they put these potatoes in the ground and then they will grow new potatoes. So I think this mindset that if I don't spend my money today, I save it, this becomes my capital. This is something that's missing, because we had a lot of bank employees going to school and teach about finances, and they always teach this, that the reason you save is that you can spend later, you know, you can save for vacation or you can save for your retirement. But nobody thought about this, that you save to create capital. So I think that's the biggest thing. And if there's one thing practically to do, I think everybody should have at least one separate bank account for saving and investing. So I haven't really met any wealthy person who has just one bank account, that salary comes in and goes out. This is emotionally very hard to save if you have this kind of method. So if you're listening and you have now just one bank account, then close the show and go and open another bank account, call it my future millionaire bank account, and start putting money there.
Okay, super. Thank you, Jaak. Thank you for coming here. And lasīt, skatītājiem, es atgādināšu, ka jūs varat mūs klausīties Spotify, Apple Play, YouTube, publicējam raidījums Facebookā, TikTokā, Instagramā un, protams, arī Nākotnes Kapitāls LV. Kā arī, ja jums rodas kādi jautājumi, droši varat rakstīt uz Nākotnes Kapitāls @delfi.lv. Paldies, visu labu, goodbye!
Goodbye!